right, welcome into Surviving Paradise, the podcast that takes a sometimes serious, oftentimes humorous look at the claim by Jehovah's Witnesses that they are living in a modern-day spiritual paradise. Welcome in. I'm your host, Stacy Bauman, former elder, ministerial servant, most importantly, a kid raised as one of Jehovah's Witnesses in the 1970s and 1980s. As I do, a quick warning for anyone and everyone on this journey known as Jehovah's Witnesses and this show. We try to have some fun here. We try to heal. Each episode features sarcasm, humor, and more. Never, ever meant to offend. Simply my own experience and set of observations. So again, welcome into this week, into the spiritual paradise that is Jehovah's Witnesses in 2023. I've shared here many times in several episodes that I was raised by a single mother who was baptized as a Jehovah's Witness in 1972 in Norco, California. That may be familiar to some. I understand there's still an assembly hall there. It's been several decades since I was there. But I remember the day well. Front row of that assembly hall, and my little feet couldn't even touch the ground. We came to Jehovah's Witnesses as a single-parent family, economically challenged. And in my case, I have to say, with a very little say in the matter. It's not a choice when you're that young. You're simply thrust into all things Jehovah's Witnesses, as was I in the early 70s. I accepted it all very early, which is why I'm hypersensitive today to children being exposed to this little group in any way, shape, or form. It's the entire reason I flipped on a microphone and lend my voice to the world that is screaming about this group. Oh, the memories. My earliest memories include that lovely peach-colored Paradise Lost to Paradise Regained book. How many people out there remember that doozy? That was my first exposure. It moved on to the pink Great Teacher book, then on to the yellow Bible Stories book in 78, and on to the epic blood red youth book. We remember that one. All four of these books played a heavy role in my upbringing in Jehovah's Witness and had a heavy, heavy, heavy influence on my thinking and, quite frankly, at that time, my life. I guess arguably you could say my life down to this very moment. It was there that I learned Jesus didn't have a beard. See page 158 of that lovely peach book, Paradise Lost to Paradise Regained. You can also see a little girl clutching for her doll as she's swallowed by the earth. It's so encouraging. It's where I should say where I learned that Jehovah allows animals to talk, that angels have swords, that Jehovah would let Satan hurt us if it made his name look good. And of course, that masturbating can make you gay. Youth book, it's a doozy. But it was also in all of these books that I learned something that had an even deeper impact on my life as I grew older. It was a simple fact that the group Jesus never mentioned, the governing body themselves, reappearing after a long hiatus in 1971, wanted to be sure that all Jehovah's Witnesses understood and understood clearly. The message was pounded into our minds from a young age, and that message was this: it's us versus everyone else. It's us versus them. It's God's people versus Satan and the demons. It's Jehovah's Witnesses versus worldly people. You remember the phrase. For anyone that grew up during that era, the term worldly people was a part of our everyday speech. We heard it at every meeting, every Bible study. It was a constant. And I got to say, at this point, I'm not sure if that term is used by the younger generation of Jehovah's Witnesses today, not in our current climate. I really don't know. That may be considered hate speech at this point, as it should, and has probably given way to terms like unbelievers. That was a phrase I adopted, even as an elder before I exited. Worldly people. What a phrase. Nevertheless, that phrase, worldly people, was a main character, a main concept in our lives. And quite candidly, it continues to be so for all Jehovah's Witnesses. We learn that at a very early age that anyone not a Jehovah's Witness was one of these so-called worldly people. And we will get into where we believed those people were headed if it wasn't for our magazines and our organization. But it's worth noting that Jehovah's Witnesses, as led by Jesus Christ of the Gospels, are encouraged and even commanded to label all other people not baptized or coming to the kingdom hall as a worldly person and someone that was the opposite of us. As I mentioned, it was pounded into our heads, an us versus them mentality that, as you will see, creates a very awkward conundrum that no one could explain to me as a kid, nor as an adult, or down to this very moment. And wow, did they get us young with this stuff. We were taught as young people how to label people. From the Watchtower of 1990, March 1st, page 15, under the article, "A Five-Year-Old Stirs Interest," here it comes. One of those experiences that you cannot corroborate. You're not sure if it's fabricated or if this person really exists, but here it is. A five-year-old. Quote, "Among over 40,000 witnesses of Jehovah in Venezuela is a five-year-old lad who had an endearing experience. He had listened carefully to public talks based on the publication, Life, How Did It Get Here? By Evolution or by Creation?" Some of us remember that baby blue book. "And to later family considerations of this book. The five-year-old, who was from a theocratic family, thus understood that evolution claims that man came into existence from a soup. One of the passages in the book discusses the evolutionary teaching that life evolved from an organic soup. It continues with the experience. For 14 years, a family next door, husband, wife, two teenage sons, and a 7-year-old daughter, had been indifferent to the requests of the Witness family to investigate the Bible and to their invitations to go to the Kingdom Hall," end quote. Imagine that. I'm sure this is familiar to all of us. Your next door neighbor is just a nice group of people, but you've got an end goal as a witness. You've got to get them to the Kingdom Hall. And this family was apparently indifferent and not interested. Back to the quote. "One day, while the witness wife was washing dishes, she heard an interesting conversation between her son and the little neighbor girl near the dividing fence. The little boy said, 'What do you know? The worldly people say that a man came out of a soup.' The little girl answered back, as she usually did, 'Are you crazy?' The little boy replied, 'No, I'm not crazy. The worldly people say that man came out of a soup, but Jehovah made man.' The boy ridiculed the idea, thinking it would be ordinary soup for eating, which he did not like. Then he went on to tell the little girl, 'My daddy should give the creation book to your daddy so that he will see that God created man.'" End quote. Yes, how I miss these experiences. But let's take a closer look. 5 years old. 5. What were you doing? What were you doing? I liked Legos. I liked playing in the mud. I liked climbing trees. I liked playing ball. I liked playing tag. But this little guy at the fence line at 5 years old has something else on his mind. And there it is. Nothing says love like trotting out a defiant 5-year-old labeling everyone outside his world as worldly people. I wonder where he learned this. Oh, wait, they told us. It was them. That's why the experience is in print for us to enjoy in 2023. The concept of us versus them starts very, very early in Jehovah's Witnesses. as young as you can see, as 5 years old. Or if you're the governing body, that might even be too late to the game. They like to get a kid believing that it's us versus them, Jehovah's Witnesses versus worldly people, as babies, where possible. From the book, The Secret of Family Happiness, page 53, paragraph 6, we get this nugget of Holy Spirit, quote, "Hence Timothy received training from when he was very young, and rightly so. Infancy is the ideal time to begin training a child. Even a young baby has a hunger for knowledge," end quote. Back then, we weren't hearing about how babies were enemies of God. They still wanted to capture their minds and mold them. So from as early as infancy, Jehovah's Witnesses, this guy included, and their children, who grow up to be adults, have been taught to segregate themselves away from anyone who is not a Jehovah's Witness. And they've been given a label in my day of which was worldly people. I used to wonder if we would soon be required to wear our convention badges as a way to identify us as a non-worldly person. I seriously had that thought as a kid. And then I thought, well, why wouldn't we? I'm looking here in the Bible Stories book. It's a lot like, well, it's like splashing blood on doorposts because Jehovah's angel couldn't identify who was an Israelite baby and who was an Egyptian baby in the time of Moses. And if the angel messed up, well, he murdered an Israelite baby when he was only sent to murder Egyptian babies. We can't have that. Lots of questions there. But yet, early in a child's mind, and in any Jehovah's Witness's mind, we get an example of us versus them. Jehovah's people versus worldly people. And boy, did it leave a mark. It still leaves a mark. Going back to my childhood and family dynamic, one of the benefits of having a very loving, but not necessarily studious and by-the-book rulemaking mother, I gotta confess right here, I was able to ignore most of the warnings on worldly people. I found them absurd. I've shared a couple of my young guy thoughts. I actually had worldly friends, which eventually led to me getting marked as a young teenage kid in the congregation. That guy hangs out with worldly people. He plays sports. He likes worldly music. But make no mistake, I hung out with those worldly friends, and I loved them. They were actually my best friends for most years of my life. But I gotta tell you, as a Jehovah's Witness or someone that was going to the Kingdom Hall at that time, I was not the norm. Not even close. Many find all of this, this concept of us versus them, Jehovah's people versus worldly people, really, really hard to believe. And I gotta tell you, anyone with couple of brain cells firing, it's with good reason. And I can't emphasize this enough. Jehovah's Witnesses judge and label everyone. Everyone, including other people in the congregation, including each other. But most certainly do they judge and label worldly people. And all of this in the most awkward of circumstances, despite the command from their king, where he said this. At Matthew 7, 1 and 2 of the New World Translation, we're reminded of what Jesus really wants. Quote, "Stop judging, that you may not be judged. For with the judgment you are judging, you will be judged. And with the measure that you are measuring out, they will measure out to you." End quote. But don't allow logic, reasoning, or even concrete proof from the King of Jehovah's Witnesses to sway you. Take it all, my own experience included, and my own disobedience, and toss it all to the side and consider a couple of things on this subject with me. One, how they view people that aren't Jehovah's Witnesses, how they really view them. And two, the unbelievable awkwardness of giving the very people you claim that you're here to save a derogatory title like worldly people. The people you are living and breathing for, that the last days continue for, you insult with a title like worldly people. And while this may seem really petty to some, okay, guilty. Guilty if that's the way you want to take a look at it. I'm willing to listen. I do believe it's all worth noting if you're someone who is considering a Bible study with Jehovah's Witnesses or their claim to being God's only true organization. Under both of those spotlights, it's worth considering my 2 points. So, the first point, how they view people that aren't Jehovah's Witnesses. And listen, I'm going to get it out of the way right now because I get endless posts and DMs on YouTube and everything. You know, this isn't how Christians, folks, this show is about Jehovah's Witnesses. Despite that fact, this is a common practice of cults, isolation, segregation. We're special. Those people over there are not special. We are clean. Those people over there are dirty. We have all the answers. Those people over there need answers. And as you will see, worldly people make up some of the most intimate relationships we have as human beings when you consider they're typically members of our family. And family won't escape the label of worldly person inside Jehovah's Witnesses. In fact, strategic move number one for someone that has a Bible study with a Jehovah's Witness and they're pushing into the baptism pool is to warn them that their worldly family is likely going to discourage them from joining God's only true organization here on the earth. As always, one has to take the book they claim was written for them, and only they understand that we need them to explain to us, otherwise known as the Bible, and do a quick search for the term worldly people, especially in the Gospels. Start there, and well, don't start at all unless you're really interested. Good luck. You're not going to find it. It's not there. It's just not there. But that doesn't matter. Any and all people that are not baptized Jehovah's Witnesses are described or used to be with a lot of emphasis by the governing body as a worldly person, alienated from Jehovah God and controlled by Satan himself, he being the God of this system of things. So if you're not on Team Jehovah, you are most definitely on Team Satan. From the Watchtower of 2019, January, paragraph 6 on page 19, under the article, How Can You Safeguard Your Heart? We are told this, quote, Satan wants us to become like him, a rebel who ignores Jehovah's standards and is motivated by selfishness. Satan cannot force us to reason and act as he does, so he tries to achieve his goal in other ways. For example, he surrounds us with people who are already corrupted by him. End quote. Whenever you hear a comparison that Satan wants us to be like him, I'm just going to admit it, I never wanted to be a talking snake. I never wanted to be an invisible guy. I never wanted to be a dragon or any other number of things we're told Satan is, whatever. He does this most especially by surrounding us with people that the governing body claims is already corrupted by Satan. Is that so? As a Jehovah's Witness, if you're not already terrified by the fact that Jehovah is always watching you, that Jesus and his kings in heaven are already watching you, that Satan is always watching you, and the demons, his pals, are already watching you, well, now you live with the reality that Satan has surrounded us with worldly people who are also out there watching you and out to get you, with their only goal in life being to corrupt Jehovah's Witnesses, get them to do any number of things, like maybe smoke a cigarette, how about watch an R-rated movie, or gasp, get naked with someone. As you can see, we are all surrounded by those already corrupted. Jehovah and Satan are playing a cosmic game of chess. And oddly, Jehovah is apparently losing as we peek in, because Satan controls everything. Governments, entertainment, social media, and now even the guy mowing his front yard next door that you can see out your window, he too is corrupted by Satan. Watch out for the worldly people. This courtesy of the governing body. It's not enough that we too, as people, each of us, any of us listening, are imperfect, with even unbaptized babies, who Stephen Lett tells us are enemies of God themselves, being worldly people. But that sweet old lady next door that brought you soup when she heard you were sick, well, her qualities don't matter either. All of them, including her, are worldly people. We are to ignore that they are kind, that they give to charity, that maybe that little old lady raised wonderful children, or maybe that she volunteers at the homeless shelter. She isn't a baptized Jehovah's Witness standing next to a book cart on a Saturday. Therefore, we get this. The Life and Ministry Meeting Workbook from April 2020, currently featured on the website, quote, "Although we likely see some good qualities in our neighbors, workmates, or schoolmates, does that mean that they are good associates? What can help us determine if someone is good association or not? Will their companionship help me improve my relationship with Jehovah?" End quote. No. Let me help you answer. She doesn't believe the nine guys in New York are in contact with Jesus, nor does she believe their New Light doctrine. She's just got a lifetime of loving qualities. And I'm here to tell you that according to the governing body, it's not enough, folks. She's a worldly person. And despite acts of kindness, she poses a serious danger to you and I as Jehovah's Witnesses. And I'll tell you, this is one that every kid that grew up during that time period can relate to. Those conversations with your mom or your parents over dinner where you want to invite over a schoolmate and you have to sit there and read off a laundry list of what makes them your friend and why they're so amazing while your parent is just shaking their head no, because they are a worldly person. That's the only factor. They're not a Jehovah's Witness. Their qualities don't matter. Where they live don't matter. If their parents are nice people, doesn't matter. You as a kid were told you couldn't be friends with them because they're worldly. From the Watchtower of 1994, February 15th, page 24, we get more nuggets from the Holy Spirit-led group in upstate New York. Quote, "We must also be on guard against extended association with worldly people. Perhaps it is a neighbor, a school friend, a workmate, or a business associate. We may reason, he respects the witnesses, he leads a clean life, and we do talk about the truth occasionally, yet the experience of others proves that in time we may even find ourselves preferring such worldly company to that of a spiritual brother or sister. What are some of the dangers of such a friendship?" End quote. And I got to tell you, with that reference, and in truth, they nailed this paragraph. I had much better non-Jehovah's Witness friends than I ever had as a teenager or even a young adult inside the congregation. And I'm sure I'm not alone. There's people that I talk to all the time that disobeyed this worldly person, us versus them garbage, and still had friends at school, work, and so forth. People that are still their friends to this day. I might even say my mother's that way. Better people in most cases with no hidden agenda to get me to believe what they believe. This one is real. I personally had amazing parents of childhood friends that took me places. I got to tell you, one of my favorite memories in junior high was of these great people that I will forever love that snuck me out to their son's birthday party. They were kind. They were giving. They had no agenda. They just wanted little 12, 13-year-old me to have a good time with his best friend, their son. My life would truly look so different without the kindness of those that I was told were worldly. And imagine the confusion in being treated so well, only to have these thoughts in the back of your head that I'd soon see all of these people being kind to me, these worldly people, being killed by Jesus, looking a lot like Michael McDonald of the Doobie Brothers, with no Grecian formula in sight, riding a white horse and shooting arrows, fire and stuff. Yeah, that stuff lived in our heads. These worldly people were kind to me. They were just nice. But they were going to die. And I'll tell you, it never ends. Worldly people, aka non-Jehovah's Witnesses, are out to get you and me, despite the fact that no one can prove this or has even seen it. It may appear that they just want to be friends and invite you to a barbecue at their place. They're not trying to get to know you and passing the potato salad. They're really trying to infect you with a venereal disease. That's right. This is what we were taught. From the Watchtower of 1987, September 15th, page 12, "Breathing this world's air is death-dealing," is the article. We get this for proof of my last comment. Quote, "While some contact with worldly people is unavoidable at work, at school, and otherwise, we must be vigilant so as to keep them, so as to keep from being sucked back into the death-dealing atmosphere of this world. Let the world go along in its way, reaping its bad fruitage in the form of broken homes, illegitimate births, sexually transmitted diseases such as AIDS, and countless other emotional and physical woes." End quote. Worldly people. We might have limited contact, but be careful. They might be trying to give you venereal disease or AIDS. And I'll tell you something. As a kid looking back on this, and as a grown adult now, imagine or try to wrap your head around the psychological effects this has on you. Whether it's the kids at school, a nice coworker, or just the people that live next door, they're all worldly people, in your mind, on a path of doom. And it's not like it's just due to ignorance. If you have noticed, these references point to the motives of these people, their character. They want us to believe, the governing body that is, that these folks are literally out to get you. Under the control of the invisible bad guy Satan, who's cheering them on. He's out to get Jehovah's Witnesses. That simple invitation that looks like a barbecue with your next door neighbor, or going to ride your bike down the street or go play ball with the kids at the park, becomes an epic conversation because the people being nice to you, that want to hang around with you, that want to get to know you, are all worldly people. And you can see the type of messaging that comes from the governing body. You have to limit this type of stuff. They're trying to get you. Another example, True Peace and Security, How Can You Find It? What an epic book. Page 122 and 126 under the chapter, Survivors Must Be No Part of the World. We get this, quote, "Only a minority has ever stayed free from the control of this invisible ruler and his forces." That's right, Satan's in control of those worldly people. Back to the quote, "Thus, the world, that is the mass of mankind alienated from God, is lying in the power of the wicked one." This may sound hard to believe, you don't say. Yet, do not most people of this world clearly manifest the attitude and works of God's adversary? Worldly people, for example, heap honor and glory on those whose ambitious drive leads them to great wealth, power, or fame. End quote. That's right, folks. The governing body has spoken, and they're getting their messaging from Jesus, as they like to tell us. That kid in your third grade class and the nice person you met at the networking event after hours, they all have ulterior motives. Oh, the irony, as we will get to. They are under Satan's control, and it's like a giant cosmic video game. He is directing them to corrupt Jehovah's Witnesses. This is what they wake up thinking about. They're not attracted to you because you're, I don't know, you? No. It's because you're a Jehovah's Witness and they have a job to do. Satan has assigned them. Their job is to corrupt all Jehovah's Witnesses. And if those references weren't enough, take a look at how this is emphasized. In the Awake of 1996, October 22nd, page 15, we are told this about anyone that isn't a Jehovah's Witness. Quote, since worldly people are existing as slaves of corruption, their company cannot bring you true happiness. End quote. Slaves of corruption? I just thought our dogs could play together at the dog park. No? Damn, you caught me. I couldn't fool you. I was so hoping to corrupt you. I'm in big trouble with Satan now. The level it takes to reason this way with thinking people, God, I'll give it to you, how horrible this is for kids, but with a thinking adult is just mind-numbing. The absurdity of this entire thought process is beyond comical. But let's be candid for a minute here. It's actually really dangerous. This is the earmark of a cult. Us versus them in an all-out battle to the finish, with the end result being a disturbing look at our fellow human beings, our neighbors, our family that are not Jehovah's Witnesses, the little guy next door. No one is seen as an individual that can stand on their own qualities and actions. Nope. We are the chess pieces in a cosmic battle of good versus evil. Do not fraternize with the other team. And a witness is peppered with this messaging. If anything, this has gotten worse. The terms may have changed. It's been a while since I've been in. But they continue to insulate and isolate Jehovah's Witnesses from the outside world, even really wonderful, kind people, many of them higher character than Jehovah's Witnesses in your own congregation. It's an uncanny, mind-bending thing that they teach these people. But let me tell you something. It gets worse. I alluded to it earlier, but the Jehovah's Witness view of worldly people extends to your own family. The very people that might have given you life, your father and your mother, your siblings, your cousins, your grandparents. No one escapes the label of worldly person if they aren't a baptized Jehovah's Witness. From the Kingdom Ministry of June 1989, pages 1 and 2, under the article Enjoying Theocratic Association, we get this, quote, one cannot walk with God while running in association with those of the wicked and sick society that approves of everything that God abhors. The Bible warns, bad associations spoil useful habits. Some in the congregation may be inclined to invite worldly acquaintances and unbelieving relatives who have no interest in the truth to social gatherings, thinking that this will encourage them to accept the truth. However, is this wise and in harmony with the scriptures? End quote. A healthy person views their family, certainly their immediate family, their extended family, as one of life's greatest gifts and treasures. At this point, I want to send a big hug to those who are being shunned by theirs. A family is a safe harbor, if you will. It's the one group that most of us in a healthy environment can depend on. So it's not a coincidence that the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses works to eliminate family from someone's life. They do it at the beginning by labeling them as a potential danger in their relationship with Jehovah God, and they do the same when or if someone slips up and sins by immediately cutting off who? Yeah, their family. And by extension, friends. if you are looking and you're at all curious as to the level of evil in Jehovah's Witnesses, look no further than this. The family you've known longer than their organization are now worldly people, and they are a danger to you, and might I add, they are doomed to destruction. And you're going to hear a lot about that. You're going to see a lot of illustrations in the publications. People that you know are high quality, high character, loving, giving, generous people, albeit flawed, aren't we all, are now doomed to a fireball or death by some other old horrific way at Armageddon. I'm going to spare you what is a endless set of references to what they call worldly people, including your own family, that anyone can find in their literature or on their website. Go take a peek. Incidentally, you can easily identify the awful worldly people in their photographs and illustrations. You might be thinking, well, how? How do I identify one of these awful worldly people? Well, if you pick up a Watchtower or one of their publications, and God, is it fun, and it is so funny to watch this in action and to see this with your own eyes. All you got to do with the publications is look for the person in the picture with a goatee or with an incredibly poorly drawn fake tattoo on their arm, back, shoulder, whatever. Beards, tattoos. Oh, that's the worldly person. You see, it seems worldly people always have facial hair and ink. That just seems to be what comes with them. Your grandma's not a witness? She doesn't have either? Doesn't matter. She's still a worldly person. But if you're looking for what identifies a worldly person and what a witness is taught to look out for, look no farther than their pictures and their illustrations of people with beards and tattoos. Part of being under Satan's control is skipping the razors when you're shopping at the grocery store. It is so demonized. Look out. Watch out. That's what worldly people do. But I'll tell you, I mentioned I'm going to stay away from an endless list of references. It's so hard to do. But I want to support this thought. A couple of examples that will provide your mind with hours of entertainment. And not only entertainment in how they view all the rest of us that aren't them, but notice how they stick their fingers and their logic and their thoughts and their counsel and any other list of things into every corner or piece or part of a person's life. In The Watchtower of 1974, December 15th, pages 766 to 768, under my all-time favorite set of articles, Question from the Readers, where paranoid thinking people send questions, should be the subheading. We are asked this by some dear person writing into the governing body. What is the view of Jehovah's Witnesses toward attending the wedding of a worldly acquaintance or relative? Yes, this is a serious question. And now for the answer under the direction of Jesus Christ. We are told this, quote, understandably, one invited to attend a wedding of worldly relatives and acquaintances may at times be faced with quite a problem. For example, the invitation may have been extended to a Christian wife and her unbelieving husband. He may think that both of them should be present for the wedding, yet she may be troubled about it. She may reason that if she were to attend a church wedding, the emotional pressure of the circumstances could cause her to do something wrong. On the other hand, she might conclude that out of regard for her husband's wishes, she could go with him merely as a respectful observer, but being determined not to share in any religious acts. End quote. A wedding of worldly people. Watching someone you love share their vows of eternal love may just result in the kind of emotional pressure that gets you, I don't know, speaking in tongues? I don't know what they're referring to here. You just never know when you're at the wedding of a worldly person. And might I add, huge shout out to the sisters that felt they could attend with their worldly husband as just an observer, which is really what anyone at a wedding is doing, and dodge the overwhelming desire to suddenly bend knee and start worshiping Satan at the wedding? It doesn't make a bit of sense. But it gives you a peek into the logic on not only what they do to Jehovah's Witnesses in these kingdom halls you drive by, but, and might I add, children, I always got to emphasize that, but they're labeling everyone else as a worldly person. Just two people in love at a wedding. Should you go? You might just lose all control and do something crazy at a wedding. By the way, if you've ever been to a witness wedding and the alcohol's flowing, never mind. I think if you've seen it, you've seen it. But yet another example. The Watch Share of 1982, August 15th, pages 30 through 31. Another one of those gems, question from the readers. The question was this. My goodness, is this a reach? How advisable is it to have your child live with worldly relatives simply because they can offer the child material advantages? Here's the answer from the faithful and discreet slave. Quote, God counseled parents concerning his words. You must also teach them to your sons so as to speak of them when you sit in your house and when you walk on the road and when you lie down and when you get up. Could parents do that if they had voluntarily sent their children away to worldly relatives for extended periods? No. Parents need to be with their children to offer regular correction and parental instruction, as well as the loving environment that young persons so need. Clearly, a Christian child's lasting, even everlasting, welfare would not be advanced if he were sent to live with worldly relatives for secular education at the expense of spiritual instruction in his own home. End quote. So that's right. If your brain is firing and you're conjuring up some thoughts on this really interesting question, your aunt and uncle offer you a place to stay while you go to college and get a job. And while your parents have failed Jehovah yet again by letting you stay with your own family that loves you but is worldly. Again, in the eyes of the governing body, family be damned for supporting their own family. You just sent your child, already an enemy of God, I might add, into Satan's lair, where they won't be getting peppered with JW indoctrination on a daily basis. Can you imagine? You're certainly an irresponsible parent. You're sending your kid to live with worldly family who love him nonetheless. It's all so confusing. One of the most unnerving examples of all of this in action, and I got to tell you, take a deep breath, and any ex-elder that may listen to this show can relate to this, can probably reel off two or three stories from their own experience. One of the most unnerving things you'll ever see, so wrought with disingenuous intent, ulterior motive, and any number of other ugly things you could title it, is how a worldly mate or an unbelieving mate is treated in a congregation. No one can explain why other worldly people are treated as lepers. I've given you a few references to go look up, but a sister's unbelieving husband can become a virtual celebrity in the local congregation. Why is that, you ask? I believe we refer to it as something called low-hanging fruit. They have one half of the duo captured. The easiest thing to do is butter up the worldly other half and get them to see things their way, the governing body's way. While it no longer matters following the annual meeting in October, there was actually a time when a baptized wife could count time on her field service report for talking about Jehovah's Witnesses with her worldly husband. Can you imagine? No intimacy needed, no definition of purity, and certainly an intense love. She could just talk about the organization and count time. It was even encouraged. And I got to tell you, looking back on that and having much experience in this matter, where you've got one person baptized and the other mate is worldly, is just, it is literally a treasure trove of material. And I think I'm going to do an entire show on it at some point. But imagine the pillow talk. And it's more often than not, it's the sisters with an unbelieving mate. That's not universal. There are many men with unbelieving wives. But it's certainly the majority is the other way. But I had to picture this as I witnessed it in my own congregation. I was guilty of it as an elder and as a brother trying to be friendly to an unbelieving mate, the same guy that I would see out smoking a cigarette and would think he was, you know, the son of Satan. Didn't matter. I'd often find myself drifting, as I often do, daydreaming at one of those fantastically informative meetings with talks I've heard a million times. I thought, what's the pillow talk like on this one? I can just imagine it. Hey, babe, I love you so much. But if you don't accept a Bible study, get baptized, and attend meetings, I'm going on to paradise with or without you. They say I'll be single forever if I survive Armageddon or even if I'm resurrected. But look, I'll have a mansion and a giraffe. You? Oh, you'll be swallowed by the earth. Why? I watch. And then I won't remember you at all. That's what they tell me. I won't even have a memory of you. Good night, honey. Will you turn out the light? That is literally the messaging between a woman who has an unbelieving mate or a man who has an unbelieving wife. I remember entire campaigns designed to get someone's worldly mate in the congregation to accept a Bible study. I went looking for the references. It was sometime in the mid-2000s. There was actually an entire service meeting on it. No, it's not to invite them to go camping with you or go fishing or see a movie. That's not the goal, folks. The end goal is always the same. Get this unbelieving worldly person mate to agree to a Bible study. As I mentioned, I'm going to do an entire episode. It's way too much fun and absurd and just drenched in hypocrisy. But how about one example? From the Kingdom Ministry, September 1990, pages 3 and 4, under the article, Be Alert to Start Bible Studies. You'll note here, I can't help it, the irony, not titled Be Alert to Make New Friends. No, that's not important. They're worldly. Start New Bible Studies. It says this, quote, unbelieving mates and other unbelieving family members generally appreciate it when they are recognized and respected by members of the congregation. You don't say. We all kind of feel that way in life. Back to the quote, showing personal interest in them can go a long way toward building friendly relations. By working together with the mate or family member in the truth, you may be able to establish a new friendship. Noops. Sorry, it doesn't say that. Quote, you may be able to establish a Bible study. End quote. That's right. Whether you're a kid going away to stay with relatives, whether you are an unbelieving mate, you're still all worldly. And if you roll up to that meeting with your baptized Jehovah's Witness mate, you get to hear the delightful future that waits for you because you're a worldly person. But I'll tell you, as I was considering this subject, I found something that was absolutely sickening. It was sickening. It's so unnerving, I almost didn't even want to share it on this episode, but here it is. And I'm just going to say this right now. Trigger warning to all the wonderful people out there that have been victims of domestic abuse. Big time trigger warning. But I can't help but share it because it's in print, it's on their website, and it's seen as spiritual food at the proper time when considering worldly people. Are you ready? Take a journey with me. An experience, much like the one earlier of the 5-year-old boy no one can corroborate or prove existed. We have another one, and I have to believe this might be true because I can't imagine making this up. It's of a young woman named Selma. Here we go. Selma is one example. When she began to study the Bible with Jehovah's Witnesses, her husband, Steve, was not pleased. He says that he became angry, jealous, and afraid. Selma says that even before she learned the truth, she was not easy to live with. She had to be careful about everything she said and did. She also says that he had always had a bad temper, but this problem became even worse when she started studying the Bible. Selma remembers a lesson she learned from the witness who studied with her. She says, "One particular day, I didn't want to have a Bible study. The night before, Steve had hit me as I had tried to prove a point, and I was feeling sad and sorry for myself. After I told the sister what had happened and how I felt, she asked me to read 1 Corinthians 13:4 through 7. As I did, I began to reason, Steve never does any of these loving things for me. But the sister made me think differently by asking, how many of those acts of love do you show toward your husband? My answer was, none, for he is so difficult to live with. The sister softly said, Selma, who is trying to be a Christian here? You or Steve? Selma realized that she needed to change her thinking. She said, I prayed to Jehovah to help me be more loving toward Steve. Slowly, things started to change. After 17 years, Steve accepted the truth. End quote. I cannot believe that this is propped up as spiritual food in a discussion of worldly people for Jehovah's Witnesses to read, consider, and emulate. You see, a female Jehovah's Witness can't join the PTA with a bunch of worldly people. But since her worldly husband is a potential Jehovah's Witness, the sister conducting this Bible study featured on their website as a story, herself brainwashed, didn't immediately lend support to this woman, Selma, and arrange for the woman to leave immediately away from all things physical harm. No, she shamed Selma the victim and encouraged her to stay. Set an example, because this worldly guy may end up being a Jehovah's Witness elder someday. What? 24 hours after enduring violence, she's at her Bible study being shamed by a Jehovah's Witness sister. A Jehovah's Witness that hasn't invited her to dinner at her home or offered any aid in leaving a violent home because, well, she's still worldly. But she encourages her to stay with her worldly husband who subjects her to violence because, well, let's be honest, who's trying to be the Christian here, Selma? He's a potential Bible study just waiting to happen. It's a stunning peek into a subject that many people may think I'm being petty about, that I think actually hovers over all things evil. The insanity, the hypocrisy, and more when it comes to all things worldly people and how other human beings are viewed by this organization known as Jehovah's Witnesses should shock and appall anyone that learns of this stuff. And it's in print. And it's taught to women. And it's taught to young girls. It's taught to kids. Us versus them. In a cosmic battle of chess, the good people versus the worldly people. And it penetrates even a situation and experience that they're rolling out as something encouraging. It's unbelievable if you allow yourself to dwell on it outside the humor. At the end of the day, a Jehovah's Witness is left with an incredibly unhealthy view of anyone and everyone that is not a Jehovah's Witness. And one option for relationships. It's unbelievable if you allow yourself to contemplate it just for a few minutes. The Watchtower of 1985, April 15th, pages 30 through 31, back to the questions from the readers, tells us, and look, I'm not going to go into the question this time. It was about good versus bad association. But it does drop this nugget into the article answer from the governing body for a Jehovah's Witness in 1985. I graduated high school that year. It tells us this, quote, "Those who become part of the Christian congregation do so because they love Jehovah and sincerely want to live by his principles. It is better to fellowship with these than with worldly people." End quote. It's a staggering peek into how Jehovah's Witnesses view the rest of the world. But I mentioned two things at the outset that I wanted to consider on this subject of worldly people. So consider the irony of what I'll call point number two on all things worldly. While you're discouraged from associating with worldly people, including family, we learned about weddings, parties, a simple barbecue with the neighbors, any of it. Suddenly, and without explanation, those same people that you see as worldly and doomed to destruction become a welcome target for our literature and a Bible study. The irony. From the Kingdom Ministry, April 1988, page 4, presenting the good news by using tracts at every opportunity. Are tracts still a thing? Somebody sound off. Boy, were they big deals back in the day. Multicolored tracts, slip them under the welcome mat. Count a placement. We did it. Successful day. That article in April 88 says this, under informal witnessing. During the course of our daily routine, we may have contact with any number of worldly persons. Wherever we are, the tracts help us to be prepared to give a witness. Opportunity for a brief oral witness can be enhanced by offering a tract for the person to read later. Notice the irony here. It continues, quote, "At your workplace, do workmates and others speak about the pressures and problems of living in this system of things? Would they like to know what has given you a hope for the future? If they truly are sighing and groaning over the world's unrighteous conditions, the information in life in a peaceful new world will strike a responsive chord in their hearts, opening the way for further discussion. Do you young ones at school hear teachers or fellow students question the reliability of the Bible? Why you can trust the Bible contains a faith-building message showing the scientific and historical accuracy of the Bible that may stimulate their interest in learning more. Jesus said that our field for witnessing is the entire inhabited earth. Thus, wherever there are people, at work, at school, in the waiting room of a doctor or a dentist, at the laundromat, or where we shop, at the homes of relatives or neighbors, or even at our own door when people stop for various reasons, let us take every opportunity to spread the seeds of kingdom good news, trusting that some of these will fall on the fine soil and result in further fruitage to Jehovah's praise." End quote. Did you catch the paradox? We've already heard that everyone's under the clutches of Satan, your neighbors, your schoolmates, your workmates, your family. And out of the other side of their mouth, they're telling you to go out and speak to all of these people about us. Just whatever you do, don't ride your bike with the worldly kid next door, attend that worldly co-worker's baby shower, or help that worldly person with a flat tire on the freeway. In those settings, they're all doomed to destruction under the heavy hand of Satan. But hey, they are the very reason Armageddon hasn't hit the planet yet, because there is more of them to save? What? Huh? It goes without saying that so many of us have thought about this. Not to mention, they seem to miss the entire point of Jesus' ministry and how he treated people, people he never called worldly. I mentioned in the weeks past that he only witnessed to apostates, the irony, and worldly people, where he actually went to their weddings. He had meals with them. He rendered aid. He healed sick people. All worldly. Oh, and I might add, just by observation, there's no verse or anything in the Gospels that gives us a sneak peek into how he handed them a tract, a magazine, or a book. What a time to be alive. What a time. It's incredible. The paradox, the mind-bending confusion that a Jehovah's Witness can go through at the mind and heart level. All of these people are worldly, doomed to destruction. I can't even go to a barbecue next door, but I should be seeking them out to jam this message down their throats. By the way, if they don't like it, I go right back to thinking they're worldly. I'm not very warm and fuzzy to them because I know they're all going to be bird food soon. And all of it includes strategies that Jehovah's Witnesses are taught by the governing body to get their message across without it being obvious. It's very slick. It's very sly. Some people would call what the governing body teaches witnesses a bit of a subliminal suggestion. It's sort of like that song that gets stuck in your head after hearing it at the grocery store. And I got to tell you, for example, I can't stop singing Mariah Carey's Christmas music right now. And all I want for Christmas is you. There, you're welcome. It's going to be in your head all day. But others would find this kind of stuff absolutely insulting. I'm labeled as this, but you want me to do that? Either way, you're not going to find Jesus of the Bible encouraging such methods for preaching to your worldly family members. But to land the point home, here's a couple of examples of what you're supposed to do to a worldly person. The Kingdom Ministry of February 97, page 1, under the article, "What about your relatives?" We are given the following direction by Jesus' guys in New York. Quote, "To refresh your relatives with the waters of truth, give them a cup at a time, not a bucketful." A traveling overseer observed, "The best results are achieved by those who awaken curiosity in their relatives by witnessing in measured doses. In this way, even opposers may begin to ask questions and eventually develop a thirst for the truth." End quote. Jehovah's Witnesses are consistently and constantly taught to strategically, if not subliminally, get their point across. All personalities are different, but in many cases, this leads to a little word we call manipulation. If you think that comment is too strong, think again. The end goal is always the same if you're being nice to worldly people. I'm only talking to you because you're a potential Bible study. At no point are Jehovah's Witnesses taught to speak to someone to just make a new friend. Not at all. They're commanded to absolutely not do that. For those that disobey and do that, they become friends with worldly people and they're seen hanging around with them. It's a one-way trip to the B school where they get a quiet little counseling session with a couple of elders. And of course, they're going to warn them that the next counseling session is going to be three elders because we just know you're going to sin. You're hanging around with worldly people. But I was witnessing to them. Were you now? And how about one more example, going back to that whole worldly marriage mate commentary from the Watchtower of 2019, August, pages 14 through 19, "Those who listen to you will be saved." It tells us this, quote, "Jehovah draws people to him by means of the fine works of the Christian congregation. If your mate is not one of Jehovah's Witnesses, has he or she met members of your congregation? Pauline, mentioned earlier, invited brothers and sisters to her home so that her husband, Wayne, could get to know them. Wayne recalls how one brother helped to break down barriers of misunderstanding. He took a day off from work just to watch a ball game with me. And I thought, he's normal." End quote. Did he now, Wayne? Another famous experience no one can actually prove. But first, did you know he isn't allowed to play sports or even be competitive? So why was he watching a ball game with you, Wayne? But I digress. Listen, drop a few F-bombs, get a little buzzed on those beers, and then tell him that you will never be a Jehovah's Witness. And Wayne, he'll be walking out that door by halftime. Guaranteed. There's always an ulterior motive if you're going to be nice to someone they've already labeled as worldly and fit for destruction. But what's so shocking in what I consider point number two that I'm probably not doing any justice to explaining, hopefully you're understanding, is that the irony just never ends. The very people Jehovah's Witnesses call worldly people and aren't able to associate with or be friendly with or hang out with are also their target audience for the preaching work. This sure got a lot more complicated from Jesus' day, didn't it? It got so much more complicated. No derogatory titles for those that didn't agree with him. He was just nice to everyone and even attended their social gatherings. Heck, his apostles were a bunch of fishermen who weren't doing anything for him when he got there that would get you marked as weak, bad association, or even worldly today in a congregation of Jehovah's Witnesses. But a Jehovah's Witness doesn't see this because they're trained not to see any of it. The irony, the very people you're here to save are the people you've labeled as worldly and will not even be neighborly, warm and fuzzy, or hang around with. It's all so awkward, and that doesn't even capture it. Your next door neighbor wants to be friends, but you really can't. After several rebuffs to their invitation to be friends, you start avoiding them at the fence line. However, on Saturday, they better still welcome you with open arms when you show up at their door unannounced with a Watchtower magazine you want them to read, interrupting their cartoons or college football and a bowl of Lucky Charms. You see, it only works one way, your way, if you're a Jehovah's Witness. And it's truly one of the weirdest things you'll experience in your time as a witness. You have to somehow switch gears in your own head from worldly person to potential paradise dweller, all in a matter of seconds. You kind of avoid them. You're a little cold to them until Saturday when you show up at their door with the latest Watchtower. Then you want them to be warm and fuzzy. A Jehovah's Witness lives in a world where authenticity is completely shot. It's long gone. Even in speaking to a stranger, your end goal is to convert them to be like you, a witness. Often, J-Dubs feign personal interest in a worldly person's see unbelieving mates just to get them to the next step, which is a baptism pole. It's truly unreal to watch them admit this in their recent videos. And by that, the one that jumps out, go back and see the series with Jade and Nita, where she meets the girl out on the street work and becomes her fast friend, but she gets super frustrated halfway through and she's just got to be a witness or she's not going to be my friend. The entire nightmare, including the manipulation, plays out on the screen for you to watch. And let me tell you, it's there for a reason. They're proud of it. They're proud of it. This is how we view worldly people. This is what we're trying to do to worldly people. It's called manipulation. In the video, Jade even goes on to ditch her worldly mother in favor of an organization she just recently learned about. It's stunning. From the Kingdom Ministry of December 2004, page 8, Witnessing to Relatives, How, we're told this, quote, "If your initial efforts to share the truth with your relatives are not well received, do not give up. Circumstances and attitudes can change. Continue to look for another opportunity to share a point that may awaken their curiosity. You may have the joy of helping them start on the road to everlasting life." End quote. The inference here is that if this worldly person isn't on the road to life already, well now, what road are they on? Uh-oh. For a Jehovah's Witness, everyone in their line of sight that isn't a Jehovah's Witness is doomed to destruction. They're a worldly person. They're going to die. I feel like it's important at this point to at least issue a disclaimer that there are those J-Dubs that are more balanced. There really are. There are even those that laugh and completely disobey this stuff. I was one of those guys. I have to fully confess, I was one of those guys. Some of my closest friends were not Jehovah's Witnesses. And they are to this day, thank God, because I have no more Jehovah's Witness friends. But the majority of Jehovah's Witnesses put anyone that isn't a baptized person like themselves into a box called worldly person. And none of them made up that title or term. They got it all from the governing body. Despite flooding the world with publications and videos claiming they love their neighbor, they only love that neighbor under certain conditions. With all the efforts to show kindness having an ulterior motive. And that is to join Jehovah's Witnesses. At best, we would call that a tainted love. A love that includes a really ugly label. I'm reminded, as I often am on this show, of the Eckhart Tolle quote in his book, A New Earth. Yes, I read everything. I give everything a shot, folks. Where he said this, and it's so profound when considering the subject of worldly people. He said, quote, "The quicker you are in attaching verbal or mental labels to things, people, or situations, the more shallow and lifeless your reality becomes, and the more deadened you become to reality." End quote. I agree. And so here's a dose of reality for anyone listening. There's no such thing as worldly people. There are simply those that believe in Jehovah's Witnesses and those that do not. And if you're a non-Jehovah's Witness or worldly person, and you want to know how a JW truly feels about you, just ask them one question. I'm never, ever, ever going to be a Jehovah's Witness. What does the future hold for me? The answer will tell you all you need to know. Thanks to everyone for joining me this week. I appreciate each and every one of you listening, wherever you may be. Be well.